When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Half my heart is in Havana, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Carlo is the king of Europe again and Forest are Premier League. It's Monday, 30th of May. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
The other half, of course, is with you, good people, right in the studio as we bring you the Football Ramble.
Yeah, I left a little trap for Marcus there in the intro script, which he avoided. It was about Jake Humphrey, I'm not going to lie. And Marcus managed to avoid it. So listen,
rode the challenge.
Fair enough. 1-0.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
1-0.
rode the challenge, yeah.
Which is, of course, how it ended in Paris.
Yes, 1-0.
It ended 1-0. Now,
well, 0-1, technically.
0-1, because yeah. Real Madrid were the away. So the underdog. And they were, the away side. We're going to talk about the match first. We will get onto the scenes outside the stadium later.
Yeah.
And all that stuff, because, of course, I mean, it's still a... The investigations go on, of course, but we do know what happened during the 90 minutes. So we'll begin with that. Real Madrid crowned champions of Europe for the 14th time in their history, their fifth Champions League trophy in the past 8 years. I mean, it's a remarkable record. We know they love that trophy. And for people who say, oh, but they won all of them back in the 50s and 60s. Well, actually, since 1998, they have won eight.
Yeah.
And that is still more than the good, next best team, which is AC Milan with seven.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? Especially when you consider how obsessed they were with La Decima.
Yes.
And they got in their own heads about it, and it looked like it was they would perhaps slipped from...
Well, it took 12 years to get
the absolute top where they, you know, believe they rightfully belong. But now they're just absolutely back in the groove.
And who was the man who gave them La
Gareth
Decima?
Bale.
The manager.
Carlo,
it was Carlo, wasn't it?
It was King Carlo. Well,
there he is again.
I mean, if you need any evidence, further evidence to kind of convince you that the Champions League or the European Cup, whatever you want to call it, is ingrained in the identity of Real Madrid. Mm. You say they've won five Champions League trophies in the last 8 years, which of course they have. I think they've made seven managerial appointments in that time.
Yeah.
And they've still done okay.
Oh, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Ancelotti, he'll be sacked by the end of this recording.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's won the league and the Champions League.
Yeah, Betis got the Copa del Rey, and that cannot stand.
Yeah. They don't care about the Copa del Rey until it means, oh, we can. It's like, you know, some people, they buy a new pair of trainers every couple of months. They just like new trainers.
Yeah.
That's Real Madrid managers.
Andy Brassel.
Yeah.
Both those guys do that.
Exactly. And they're very similar men to Florentino Perez. I've often made the comparison. But a record fourth Champions League crown for Carlo Ancelotti. Of course, I absolutely loved it in the post-match interview on the pitch where he said, I'm the record man.
Yeah. Which and I come from done... down your way.
I wish he'd done a little Emil Heskey celebration, you know, with the old playing. No,
I wish he'd gone, yeah. I come from down your way and I can play. And Des Kelly went, what can you play? Yeah. And he said, I play the Champions League. And this went, umpa, umpa, umpa.
Just one of the many things BT neglected to mention over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, of course, this match was the warm-up for Solihull Moors versus Chesterfield.
Of course.
More on that in a wee while.
For those who weren't watching BT Sports, what on earth we're going on about? But just trust us, that's hilarious. Carlo Ancelotti, yes. I mean, he did say he's the record man, which I did quite like, because it cuts a different figure, of course, to Jose Mourinho, who won his fifth European trophy, as we know, and said it was about others, and then holds up the old five digits.
Yeah,
whereas Ancelotti didn't hold up four digits. He could have held up a few more, because he has won the UEFA Super Cup three times and the Intertoto Cup.
I do worry about his health with all the cigars he must be smoking.
It's just for the look. He doesn't light it.
He does light it.
Yeah. you also got to think about making... So one of the big debates around Ancelotti is that, you know, he is very good at what he does, to say the least. Mm. But a lot of the more beardy types of people who cover football will talk about whether he's changed the game or not, right? Whether he's actually left a lasting imprint on the game. And actually, his real imprint on the game, not like a Guardiola or a someone else, Rodrigo Sacchi or whatever.
Well, you could even say Bielsa.
Yeah. His identity is basically winning, right?
So his identity, trophies.
Exactly,
mate.
It is trophies.
But he does it in a different way to say Mourinho.
But it's not just in Europe. He's won league title.
Club World Cup.
Correct.
There you are.
Let me.
Global.
Let me. he's won league titles in all five top.
Yeah, and no one's
division.
Done that.
And no one else has done that. So you've got to start talking about him now, because I don't think people do talk about him enough for that reason, about the identity he has or hasn't, that he is possibly the greatest club manager ever.
Another thing the beards say as well, another thing that the beards say is that essentially that those managers, well, any manager really, they sort of have a life cycle, right? That you probably don't get more than about 10 years out of them at the top. And Ancelotti is clearly evolving his game. I mean, this is something Alex Ferguson was praised for, wasn't it? Constantly being able to read the field and the way that the game was changing, adapting to it and remaining successful in it. Ancelotti's done that over different leagues and different cultures and remained sort of successful in Europe's biggest competition as well. So he has to be in that conversation. I think he's so present, you go blind to him almost.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're absolutely spot on, Jim. And just to back that up, you know, his first Champions League win was in the final in 2003 at Old Trafford with AC Milan. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2022. And understandably, people talk about managers actually having that, as you mentioned, the sort of cycle at the top, which maybe a lot of players do as well. I mean, it's 19 years apart.
It's astonishing.
And here he is again, because, you know, he was managing Everton, of course, not that long ago. And then he's given he's picked up the phone from Real Madrid, who have given him the SOS, and he's gone there to try and sort of smooth things over and basically salvage something from the season. They've won the league at Cantona. I know Barcelona aren't pulling up trees, but still, a league title is a league title. And won this Champions League in incredible fashion, because every game they went into, they can't do this one, but they can't do this one. And even going into this final, I thought, you've had an amazing time. I mean, I still can't believe Manchester City didn't win that semi-final. But focusing on the final, you thought to yourself, okay, surely now that they will be beaten by the favourites and arguably, I mean, Michael Owen would certainly say they were still the better side. And I do actually understand that point.
They were still the team to beat. After Real Madrid had beaten them.
Just beaten them, yeah. Okay, his wording was poor.
It's mental.
Yeah.
he can find the absolute bullseye of a nonsense point in any given moment. Yeah. It's actually a talent.
What a player on his day, though.
As producer Phil was saying to me earlier, we've just had the game that decides who is the team to beat.
Right?
And it's unfolded in front of his eyes, and he's gone for the other team.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
they're the team not to lose. Yeah. But look, it was. I mean, Thibaut Courtois takes a lot of the plaudits, of course, making nine saves, which is the most saves of any goalkeeper in a Champions League final. Well,
and it's not just the final this season where he's been so impressive. He made, coming into this game, he'd made 50 saves.
Save in the semi final against Man City as well.
Alisson had made 14 to show you the difference. So it says a lot about how various campaigns have gone. But that's the thing with Real Madrid, isn't it? And Ancelotti as well, that they are never uncomfortable in games.
No.
It actually doesn't like even when you know they really look like they're going out, they can keep their heads and keep their calm and keep playing. And so even though they were under the cosh for a lot of the game, they weren't rattled
finals.
By it. They weren't rattled by it at all. No, they don't lose finals. And I think I'm really pleased for Courtois because one of the things about a Champions League final is you get these moments. Zidane had it with his volley and obviously Bale with his overhead kick, a few others as well. It's very rare that a goalkeeper has that moment.
That's right, in
elite football, there's sometimes more than a prize available in a final. You know, you get the chance to make that final a moment. You put it in history as almost the Courtois final. And it doesn't happen in many finals, but this is... You'd argue that this is one of those moments where this will always be synonymous with him and his performance.
Yeah.
And that is, in a way, that's worth more than some silverware, you know?
I know what you mean.
You write yourself into the history of a club and into the game.
Yeah, definitely. And he certainly made his feelings known in the post-match, didn't he, when he said, today I needed to win a final for my career to put my respect on my name because I don't think I've had enough respect, especially in England.
Well, I mean... And that's a really interesting point. I think I agree with what Jim said there. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. I think that a lot of the conversation around the best goalkeepers in the world in this country is centered around Alisson and Ederson.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand why, because
gets a mention.
Yeah, I mean,
in this country.
In this country, I was talking about, and I was going to say, you understand why, because you know people watch the Premier League more than any other league, so I get that. So for Courtois to be able to put in that kind of performance, and it was a remarkable performance from him. I mean, I thought that overall, I thought Liverpool were pretty disappointing. I thought that, you know, Real Madrid clearly set up in a way to make it tough for Liverpool, and it basically worked. You know?
It did.
And you have players like Diaz, who's really been amazing since he's come to Liverpool, kept pretty quiet by Carvajal, and then they switch it around, and different players have a go on that flank, and they can't really get any joy. Liverpool, I thought, were quite poor in a couple of areas. One was out wide, which traditionally they've always been very, very good.
Yeah.
Secondly, their delivery was really poor.
It was.
Their delivery was consistently very,
Alexander
very poor.
Alexander Arnold didn't have a good night, did he?
Well, he was obviously caught out by Vinicius, who's an absolutely magnificent player.
Oh, yeah. What a moment for him as well, by the way.
When you identify and single out a player like Courtois for those two incredible saves he made, there's a couple of knock-on effects, I think. One is that you forget about the other stuff he did, which was he dominated this area so well. And I wonder whether he made a lot of Liverpool's delivery look bad because he was so assertive.
Incredibly proactive performance from a keeper, wasn't it? You don't always see that.
And secondly, you detract from Vinicius, who basically was, you know, just terrifying on that on that flank all night, really. And obviously crowned it with his goal, which was a brilliant piece of anticipation and a really kind of sharp finish. I actually thought it might have been offside. I was surprised it wasn't
looked at. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
we didn't get a chance to see the pictures of them checking it.
Yeah,
which to me gets the old Matt Letizia tinfoil hat going, because you think to yourself, why are they not showing it?
Probably because of the one in the first half. They thought, oh, there was so much bollocks surrounding that.
Well, that was a crazy one as well.
Let's just let this one go.
But the thing that's annoying about that first one, which is, if people are listening don't remember, it's the one where it's deflected off of Konate's knee, which looked Fabinho's knee, which looks like it wasn't, which made it look like it couldn't have been offside, but actually the laws dictate that if it's a deflection or an intentional thing, there's not a quote reset, so it is offside. Yeah. But the problem with that is two things. One is the laws are so complicated now, and two, with the greatest respect to the broadcasters, they don't understand them, right? And then three, the guy they've got who's the ex-professional referee to explain them explains them, and then the broadcasters don't fucking accept it.
which doesn't
help anyone,
does
it?
Which is why I
like Walter said it's actually quite easy.
Yeah, he did, and he explained it, and I thought, oh, I understand that. I'm not sure I agree that should be the rule, but I understand
the rule,
it. I just like where Steven Gerrard, Rio was still confused, and he went, don't worry, Rio, Peter's, you know, let's talk about this. But it wasn't given.
So Alexander Arnold was at fault for the goal, that's what the point I was going to say.
He was, and he didn't have a great game. And the way Real Madrid set up against Liverpool was very canny. You know, let them have the ball out wide. I mean, not that to disrespect the Real Madrid fullbacks, who, as you mentioned, Carvajal, you know.
He had a good game, Carvajal.
He had a very good game.
Again,
as well.
Just so much experience. Yeah. Canny. He's one of those players who's not going to lose his head.
No, exactly. Mendy had a good game. I mean, you forget David Alaba in the centre. You know, his name wasn't mentioned that much just because of the way he sort of marshalled it and so
Casemiro
on.
Casemiro played well.
Casemiro was great. Militao was brilliant. But they were so good at the back, defending deep in numbers because you know what Liverpool have got. And also Liverpool, in these last few months, they have slowed down. We've seen Salah's been on the bench quite a bit. I mean, you could say think about the amount of football Liverpool have played. And their two star players, Salah and Mane, not only have they had these grueling seasons, they also had the Africa Cup of Nations. Where they both went to the final, where Salah just misses out and Mane obviously wins the trophy.
They've had the playoff as well.
They've had everything.
Against each other.
The whole business, exactly. I mean, Mane, probably the greatest moment of his career when he wins it with Senegal. And he doesn't get what European players do with the World Cup or the or the Euros if they do win it. Obviously, this season's different, but other than that, you then get the rest of the summer to process that and to enjoy it, or to try and process the disappointment that Salah, as soon as that's finished, there you are, you're with your countrymen having a good old time, right, bump, back to the grind of the Premier League. No wonder they've looked exhausted. People have been a little bit snooty about the way they've won both finals on penalties. They've won the finals.
They have.
So that's the end of that. I understand they haven't scored in three finals, but they've still won
just
two
odd, just a proper.
What do you make of that? Do you think
that?
That's a coincidence, though?
I just think teams, when it comes to the crunch, they think, right, we've got to set up in a certain way against Liverpool to try and contain them and hope for the best. And
I with think goalkeeping teams do that anyway, though, don't they?
Perhaps. But goalkeeping performances and chances missed have ensured, you know, on another day, Liverpool win this final. They do. You know, it tips onto the post. Salah, you know, it was a great effort, you know, Courtois scores. But on another day, if he can wrap his foot around it a little bit more, I'm not blaming him, but it was a chance.
Yeah.
You know, these are the opportunities. But I think the disappointing thing is to not be able to think a bit more, because Real Madrid basically said, you can have the ball out wide. Who are you going to cross it to? Mm. Who you got? Militao all day long, just whacking the balls away and so on. And that's why when I said, you know, message, I said, for crying out loud, get Firmino on, because he gives you something else to think about. Mm. Jota coming on, yeah, I get that. But Firmino, I know he hasn't played that much, and people think, oh, but he's yesterday's man. Well, no, he's still got quality. He's the type of guy, he's a bit more of a cultured target man. Mm. You play it off, and it's a little bit something to think about, because what they were doing wasn't working. Mm. As soon as Real Madrid went 1-0 up, you thought, I'd be surprised if Liverpool get a goal here.
Oh, the margins are so fine. And my point I was going to come back to you earlier was just going to be that you're talking about Salah, you're talking about Mane, but you haven't mentioned the fact that there's been uncertainty around their futures as well.
Yeah. Mm.
But the problem is, we as broadcasters and people who have to cover the game and all this kind of stuff, we look for narratives when there's been a defeat.
Mm.
When actually, you know, the width of Thibaut Courtois' bicep aside, it's 1-1, and Liverpool could win an extra time or on penalties or whatever. They get some confidence from that. Real Madrid go, shit, what are we going to do now? And the whole thing's different.
Yeah.
So
totally.
It's such fine margins. Mm. I just think you have to look at the game and go, Real Madrid. And we've been saying it for weeks on this show. I always fancied Real Madrid basically after the Chelsea one.
When you have that culture at a club,
exactly,
it pushes
and Brussels,
you.
Brussels was the same.
Yeah.
It was. I don't think Liverpool fans were in danger of writing Real Madrid off. I obviously understand they want to back their team, and why wouldn't you back your team? They're one of the best teams around. But there's just something about Real Madrid. They had that belief, and they've also got an amazing blend of experience and youth and pace and, you know, devastating technical ability. Mm-hmm. You take Cruz, Casemiro, and Modric in the midfield. I think a combination of Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson, and Keita, whoever it may be in that Liverpool midfield, have been brilliant all season.
Yeah.
But you're not really going to get anything past Modric, Casemiro, and Cruz. They're not going to experience anything in that final and go, "What? I don't know what this is. Yeah. I've never experienced this before."
And the times they have been down against Chelsea and against Manchester City, they've pulled it out the bag in ways that will be talked about probably forever, because they've gone and won the trophy. But also, Real Madrid won the league, it seems like a while ago now.
Yeah.
So they've had a bit of a rest, if you see what I mean. They've enjoyed that. And Liverpool, let's be fair to Liverpool, they've had a great season. Mm. It's not been phenomenal, because you've got the quadruple dangled in front of you.
Yeah.
But they've had a very, very good season. And I know people slag them off. I'm glad they had the open top bus parade and all. Because,
yeah, absolutely.
Because, of course, football's about having a good time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they've had a bloody good time, because they've won two trophies. And to give that team their support is the right thing to do. Because with two games left of the season, one in the Premier League and one in the Champions League, the quadruple was still on. That is a phenomenal. Well, I just said it wasn't a phenomenal. Yeah. That's a very, very good season. Let's
it's the closest
get my superlative
come, right.
It's fine. It's fine.
To be in England,
that late
in men's football in England
is impressive. Really, really is.
And they've just missed out on the two biggest ones. Okay, but when all said and done, that's a very, very, very good season from Liverpool. But of course, it ends on a bit of a disappointment, which is understandable. But again, in context, the canniness of the players you've just mentioned there. Look, the way they played, the way they ground it out. Carlo Ancelotti's in charge. It's a final where Carlo Ancelotti's managing Real Madrid. don't be that surprised that you lost. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
In hindsight, indeed.
The old plucky Real Madrid, eh?
Yeah, underdogs until the whistle blows.
But Liverpool, yeah, they will be gutted. But Klopp did say, well, I tell you what, book the hotel for Istanbul next year because we're going to get back.
See,
yeah.
I love that. And he's consistently been like that with disappointments with Liverpool. Yep. Isn't he? He's always essentially immediately re-energised them. Yep. And I think that's, you know, you look... We're talking about the culture at Real Madrid, which is essentially what makes them so confident in these games, and how, regardless of the personnel, you look at the name with Real Madrid, and they come through, and you go, well, of course they did. It's Real Madrid. Yeah. That is what Klopp has brought back to Liverpool. Mm. That wasn't there for a long, long time. Yeah, now you know they're regularly in these situations because they've brought that culture essentially up to date.
Yeah, and also as well, Spanish teams in European finals, unless they're playing each other.
Ridiculous.
You don't have a Spanish side that is a runner-up in, the 21st century or something like that. Mm. They have a phenomenal record. The real loser, arguably, on the night was Camila Cabello, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is a great shame. Yeah. Performed before the game, of course, wasn't happy with the crowd. In the tweet which she then deleted, she said, playing back our performance, and I can't believe people were singing their team's anthem so loud during our performance. Like, my team and I worked tirelessly for so long to bring right vibes and give a good show.
Yeah, not her fault.
Yes, it's not her fault. It's UEFA's fault. It's probably not the worst thing UEFA did that evening.
It's their fault for not booking Childish Gambino.
Exactly.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Gambino knows how to handle these kind of events.
Well, you know? Gambino's got to be given a go.
Yeah.
But again, Gambino...
He cut his teeth doing lower league at finals, didn't he? He's come up through.
He's
the
doing
right
some
circuit.
Of the holes yeah, this weekend.
You know, see, I'm not sure. I think Gambino needs to be given the Europa Conference League. What you need, and we're talking about experience,
what,
with
promotion
Cruz.
And relegation of
exactly.
Of artists.
You're talking about Kroos and Modric and Ancelotti in experience. Who's the main man who's going to win them all over? Hmm. Pitbull.
But you talk about the UEFA, you mentioned UEFA there. I know we're going to come on to talk to them now now.
Yeah.
But it is related, and I'll tell you why the whole thing's related. It's because. And it's not Camila Cabello's fault. I like her. I think she's great.
Yeah.
It's not her fault. But why is she being booked here? She's being booked here. No, why is anyone being booked to do a performance before a final? It's because they're
trying to make it into the Super Bowl, aren't they?
I totally agree.
It's because they are massively prioritising the TV audience over the fans in the stadium, right? So, and the whole thing is related. Of course it is because fans aren't treated with anything like the respect they should be, and they're shat all over by UEFA. Mm. And this is just, admittedly, a more benign reflection of it, but a reflection of it nonetheless.
Yeah, but, you know, I say fair play to her, you know. She's not going to turn it down. It's a big stage. She played her part.
She, of course, it's up. If she wants to go and do it, great. If she's going to get paid well for doing so, and it's a gig, and you know, she's obviously fairly, based on that tweet, which is obviously, as you've said, now been deleted, quite a naive thing to say, but she probably wasn't briefed properly because you're away for a fucking shambles.
All I'm saying is, Camilla, get yourself down Craven Cottage next season for a Premier League game, but you can perform. It'd be a lovely old time.
Yeah, I think that she would be treated with respect at Fulham.
I would have thought so.
Yeah,
I would have
thought so. Believe their luck, would they? Yeah.
Gentlemen, we are going to have to talk about the game being delayed and all the chaos that happened, of course, outside the stadium. I mean, it's just it's yet another UEFA final that's had a lot of controversy, and we hear now, as the reports are coming in and what we heard yesterday and so on, the blame game is being played, which is pretty piss poor, especially when it's being labelled at Liverpool fans, because as far as we can see from Twitter, from reports and so on and so forth, it seems they were given a very, very, very hard time from the French police. We saw that, you know, they were bottlenecked into us. It was Sky Sports News was saying, you know, there was 20,000 Liverpool fans were kind of bottlenecked into a certain bit. It's worrying. I mean, it's incredible that all that kind of managed to happen without a serious disaster, but it's piss poor in the highest possible degree. And I mean, Liverpool have said the treatment they received from stewards and the police, it was an absolute disgrace, and it certainly, there was videos that we've all seen and so on, which
seem to really kind of refute the official stories that we're hearing.
Absolutely.
As well, there's been a lot of different contrasting reports coming up, but it looks like what's happened is that Liverpool fans have been funneled into a tight area, pepper sprayed, and then blamed for it.
Yeah.
It's outrageous.
And this idea of fake tickets is also a thing that's been blamed. But then Andy Robertson said he gave an official ticket to his friend, of course, because he's got access to a few.
Yeah.
And that was called, oh, it's a fake ticket, you can't get in. What the hell's going on?
The whole thing boils down to a complete lack of control and leadership at the very top and this UEFA's responsibility.
Yeah.
And you know that's the case because you can see several reports from, you know, esteemed and very trustworthy journalists, some of which, you know, we know personally, I've spoken to, and I know plenty of fans who are at the ground as well. And the story is the same. Their stories are completely consistent. Mm. UEFA's story aren't consistent.
No.
UEFA, the amount of different messaging being released before the game as to why the game was delayed were completely contradictory because they had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
And if they can't take control of the situation, if they can't understand that, you know, for example, there's some kind of rail strike in central Paris, which means it's going to be difficult for fans to travel. They don't anticipate or learn anything from the situation that happened at Wembley last year, which of course, you know, what happened at Wembley last year where certain groups of small minority groups of fans forced their way in without tickets. Mm. That's on them, right? That's their responsibility for not behaving that way.
Yeah.
But UEFA have a responsibility to learn from that and go, look, if that's going to happen there, it may happen here. We need to prepare for this. And the amount of stories I heard of personally, directly from fans who had said, look, we got here at six.
We were
outside the stadium at six and we still didn't get in.
They said 2 or 3 hours Liverpool fans were stood around. There's a paranoia with English football fans, I think. No, I understand.
Absolutely.
I understand the reputation. You don't want to be jingoistic about this, but there definitely is. That treatment of those Liverpool fans was an absolute disgrace. And to be honest with you, I'm amazed that, as far as I could see, and as you say with the stories, the Liverpool fans actually didn't
were as restrained
react
as they were.
They showed a lot of dignity in with that regard. But you know, the chats about the Euros final at Wembley, of course, we remember that. The Europa League in Sevilla, you know, Rangers.
That was really mishandled as well.
They were complaining about that. You know, this idea that this sort of outer ring that we often hear, don't we? This sort of to protect the stadium. It's quite different. The Stade de France, as I've not been, but as I see it, it's quite in a built up area. Same as Wembley Stadium. You get off the tube and you've got that long walk down Olympic Way or Wembley Way, and there's Wembley. It's difficult to set up that kind of perimeter. Jim and I, we went to the final in Rome in 2009 when Barcelona beat Manchester United 2-0. They could do that there. There's a bit more space. And actually, what they want to do is you have that outer ring. So because we were told, get there quite early because there will be a few checkpoints to go through with the tickets. But what that ensures is it's actually quite calm going into the stadium. You have that room, you have that space. So you go through, and there's actually quite a long walk, should I say, to the stadium, which is pretty calm, and it was all handled pretty well. But unfortunately, stadiums like Stade de France and Wembley don't have that. Yet, we've seen many finals at Wembley before. We've seen Champions League finals previously and whatnot. We've seen this at Stade de France as well. These recent finals, UEFA have really got to look at this.
I think it feels like UEFA's protocols are only fit for events that go off without any sort of hitch whatsoever.
Yes.
And clearly, if we've got three finals in a row where there have been issues, they need to completely rewrite them. I think they just need to be better, clearly, across the board. There's consistent problems here. So whatever they have in place isn't working. Something's different now, clearly.
There's no communication. Clearly, no communication between UEFA representatives and local police, for example, on Saturday night's instance. Saturday night, it looked to me, and based on the reports I've read and heard, that neither of them knew what each other were doing.
Mm.
So that's obviously a problem. Your point about the cordon is really a really important one. I think there are official guidelines in place, which is something that they should be 900 metres away from the stadium for the first check, which ensures there's no bottleneck. But ultimately, what it comes down to is this. It's a two-pronged point. One is that UEFA almost certainly don't want to pay to have proper security and proper protocols in place. And secondly, they've got the easiest get out in the world, particularly when there's an English club involved, because they'll just blame the fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can blame fans' behaviour for absolutely everything, and it's like the ultimate get out.
Yep.
And all you need to do to quote prove it is find a video where certain fans are misbehaving and say, look what's happened.
Yeah.
But we all know, because we've all seen the videos of French police behaving the way they're behaving, Real Madrid fans jumping fences, as well as Liverpool fans jumping fences. Those fans who are doing that are, of course, young fans who can do that because they're saying, look, I think we need to get out of this situation. Mm. Never mind the older people who've got no option to do that because they can't physically climb a fence. And thirdly, you've got local French people jumping over fences as well without tickets. So the whole thing is not being organised properly. And to blame one particular bunch of fans is wrong, not only because of that, but also because if you take the time to go onto Twitter and look at a lot of Spanish language Real Madrid fan accounts, they're all saying a similar thing.
Yeah.
They're saying, actually, this is the most shambolic organised thing I've seen. Mm. I saw a particular Real Madrid fan, I'm not sure if he was affiliated with the supporters club, but he said, he had been to every Real Madrid Champions League final, I think, since 2003, and it was the worst he'd seen.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really is. Ultimately, the buck stops with them, you know?
UEFA have said that the late arrival of fans was to blame. I think someone from the French government said that there was no problem with Real Madrid fans. This is clearly bollocks, clear nonsense, misinformation being put out there. I mean, Liverpool actually brought Merseyside matchday police with them, who have completely rejected all those views as well. It's astonishing that we're seeing this.
So 2002, not 2003. Real Madrid weren't in the final 2003. I understand. That's what listeners will focus on after everything I've said.
But it is a great shame that, as I say, people are hurling this stuff at Liverpool fans.
But we should be thankful there weren't a lot of serious injuries. Absolutely. And sadly to say, you know, people dying, because it has happened before, as we know.
Absolutely right. But again, I just wanted to say that it was good to see Liverpool having that bus parade through their city, getting the appreciation from their fans. And
over what has been a remarkable season.
It's been a great season as well. Calvin Harris was a surprise guest on the bus.
Yeah, when I first read this, I thought, I don't know why, because I'm old probably, I thought you meant Calvin Phillips. And I was like, that's a bit of a rogue move.
Yeah.
He's still a Leeds
player. An unveiling.
Do I get a medal?
Yeah.
Oh, dear me. Of course, Jose Mourinho was seen driving Roma's bus before their parade.
Great stuff.
Mm, absolutely. That's what you want.
Driving the bus. Weirdly. Not parking it, as many people made the comment.
He's getting a bit more relaxed, isn't he? In a very weird way.
He's having a lovely time.
I'd love it if he obviously did park the bus. That'd be brilliant if he just parked it.
Yeah.
Gave
the eyebrow. Yeah, there we are. All right, everybody, let's have a quick break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You better get your finger out, all right, and make sure that you get their fucking results.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. It's now time for emails. Press the button. Tickle your ivories.
Football Ramble. It's a pretty good place to start. Football Ramble.
But it just sounds a bit gimmicky.
But I think it's exciting. Ramble.
Football Ramble.
Phil Neville.
He confused testicles with balls.
Very rarely does it all go completely silent because no one knows what to say.
Where does this rank? Is it above or below punching the punching of the horse?
They thought to themselves, "Well, old Fizzer knows his onions."
Personally, I think it's a bit of a silly one.
You got Emil.
Well done.
Football Ramble.
The home of Willy Waver.
You got Emil.
Tune in this time next week to hear it again.
Don't play again. He's still there, everybody.
When it says you got Emil, it sounds like Donald Trump.
A little bit.
I don't know if it is him, but...
No, it's fake news. Fake news.
Yeah.
Jim, more fake news.
Sounded more like Donald Trump than that did.
We're so proud. James has been in touch. He says, I've always felt animosity towards Gary Neville, but never had a reason to explain this feeling. However, this weekend I went to a City Centre pub in Manchester to watch the Champions League final and Gary Neville happened to be in attendance. To my and everyone else's annoyance, the pub landlord refused to put the commentary for the game on as Gary Neville had asked them to leave the Manchester Classics playlist on through the game. Despite queues of people at the bar asking for the commentary, it was never provided thanks to Gary's request. Maybe his professional rivalry with BT Sport led to this decision, but whatever the reason, the atmosphere around the game was ruined by Gary Neville, enemy of football. Now, this has the air of kind of, you know,
did it
perhaps
happen?
Mistruth around it. But we have looked at some of Gary's videos from the weekend, and James, Sit Down by James, is playing in the background. So
yeah. And they are famously a Manchester band.
Exactly.
As well.
We've Wagatha Christie'd it. And there's evidence to suggest this may be the case. Yeah.
I like that we will do research for that.
Yep.
We won't do research for anything else, but we will do research for that.
Absolutely. We know who we are.
I think really.
Home of Willy Waving.
James is. Email the James there. He's got to be careful what he wishes for, because if they had acquiesced to everyone's request and Gary Neville there had agreed and they put the commentary on, they would have had to listen to Steve McManaman.
They would have. And he saved them from that.
Exactly. So be careful what you wish for, I would say. Would you rather have Gary Neville playing Manchester Classics in a pub or listen to Steve McManaman? It would be Steve McManaman for me, but it's a close one.
Yeah. Yeah,
It's fine, isn't it, Fletch? There's nothing in that. It's fine. Get over the game. It's fine. Did you see that?
So everything's amazing or fine?
Yeah.
I thought that.
No, not for me. That's fine.
I thought maybe that this was in hotel football.
Oh, could have been.
But he does say city centre pub.
Yeah, could have been. Maybe there's a pub attached to it.
Yeah. It's not really, it's right by Old Trafford, so not really in the city centre.
Okay, fine. Good to know. It's great to have some local knowledge as well.
I've been there.
Yeah, I think there's a reason James sent this email to us, isn't there? Yeah. we should say Gary Neville should have the right to reply, so if he wants to pipe up about it, he can do.
Mm. Yeah. But does Gary Neville respect the football ramble?
I don't think Gary would have done it because of some kind of BT Sport rivalry.
No.
I'd have just thought he's just a bloke who's used to having his own way, maybe.
Yeah, I also think he would probably do it because it's really funny.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, there's maybe a bit of that as well. Bit of that as well. Fizzer wouldn't do that. He wouldn't know how to use the controls.
Could elevate his voice loud enough. No. He'd be heard in a busy pub.
I can't hear you over the commentary.
Can you put the commentary on?
The mid-table now, though. Get in touch with
Miami.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Flying off the bottom. Get in touch, everybody. Show at footballramble.com for all that kind of crap, or tweet us at footballramble. Right, we go straight to the Championship playoff final. Nottingham Forest are up. They've done it. Go on, Forest. Frankie Clark.
Come on, Forest.
Frankie Clark.
He was there.
Frankie Clark was there.
He was there. Cool. Looking very dignified and very quietly happy.
Old
school.
Very old school happy.
He's late 70s now, Frank.
Of course.
Great to see him there after his experience at Forest as well.
What a man. They're back in the Premier League for the first time since 1999. Their last go at the playoffs, I think, was about 10 years ago. 10, 11 years
ago. They'd never played at the new Wembley, had they?
Yeah. Mm. It's remarkable, really, considering their history. And when we talk about clubs who have gone long periods without sort of winning trophies or this, that, and the other, Forest are the epitome of that. Of course, they've got an incredible history, won trophies. And in the 80s, you know, they were doing well. In the 90s, they were an established Premier League side. But we haven't seen them since in the top flight. And it looked so unlikely this season because they lost 6 out of 7. They were bottom when Steve Cooper took over in September. And now look at them, Jim Campbell. They'll be dining at the top table with the likes of Arsenal next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll probably beat us as well. They somehow still beat us regularly.
They'll definitely beat Arsenal. Listen, mate, I don't really want to play this if I can break this to you. They are beating Arsenal next season. Fucking 100%.
Can you imagine Arsenal at the City Ground?
Oh, big time. Yeah. They'll beat him.
I don't have to imagine it. I can remember it. It happened this year.
Picture this will come out. First day of the season. Well, it'll be Friday night game. Mm. It'll be Arsenal at Forest. Forest 2-0.
Yeah.
Exactly the same as what happened at Brentford last season.
Yeah, I can see that.
Anyway, Jim, do you enjoy...
Fuck off, Forest. Frankie Clark. I'm sick of him already now, actually, thinking about it.
Success, Jim, after that?
Yeah. No, it was a weird game, though, wasn't it? I think, obviously, Huddersfield can feel very, very hard done by with the way things played out. It's the worst way to lose a playoff, an own goal in a frustrating situation, and those penalty shouts. Was it a penalty or not is my least favourite thing to talk about in football. It's so boring. Really strong shouts for both of those, I think.
I thought they were both penalties. It's as simple as that. I don't understand at all why A, the first one isn't overturned, and B, the second one isn't even looked at. To me, I think Huddersfield Town can feel very, very hard done by.
I can't believe the second one's not looked at. The first one, people say it was a dive because there was minimal contact. But the fact is, if he doesn't pull his leg out of the way, there's contact. And it's one of those ones where you think, well, should you leave your leg in there and, you know, get a bit of a thump or whatever? I mean, it didn't look that bad a challenge.
Do you know what annoys me about the first one, Marcus? Sorry to cut in, but the thing that annoys me about it is John Moss approaches that situation with such... Well, don't let the door fucking hit you on the way out, John Moss. that he approaches that situation with such certainty that he actually, it's his arrogance that stops Huddersfield Town getting anything out of it. Because he wasn't sure. He could say, carry on, let's carry on playing. The VAR are going to look at it and we'll take a look. If he doesn't make a decision, it makes it far easier to award the penalty because nothing needs to be overturned.
Yeah.
Because he stops the play, gives a yellow card for diving, which was preposterous, and it makes it far harder for it to be a clear and obvious error and it be overturned. The only two people in that stadium and watching at home who didn't think that was a penalty are John Moss and Paul Tierney, who was on the VAR. In a game of that magnitude, it is completely unacceptable.
You say that, though, but I've got a WhatsApp group. People thought they were saying, that's a dive, right, yellow card.
Jack Colback knew it was a foul.
Yes, he
Jack
did.
Colback's reaction suggests that for 100% of the time, he thought it was a foul.
Okay.
He looked at he even did the crossing himself thing because he was so relieved that he hadn't cost his team a penalty in a playoff final.
Yeah.
Right? And Paul Tierney's looked at that about four or five times. You cannot tell me that's not a penalty. The second one's a definite penalty.
Second one,
and the second one, it's not given because the referee doesn't understand how players actually play the game, doesn't understand how defenders defend.
Yeah.
It's great movement from the striker, which leaves the defender the wrong side, which means he has to go through the player to try and win the ball because he's on the wrong side. John Moss doesn't understand that. It's a clear penalty as well. For me, I don't want to take anything away from Forest. I'm pleased they went up. I've said it in the week leading up to the game. I'd like to see them do it, and I'm pleased for them.
Yeah.
I'm pleased for all my friends who support Forest, of which I know quite a few.
Yeah.
But that was shambolic, that referee and this performance. And as far as I'm concerned, if that's what we could have looked forward to next season from John Moss, then he's better off retired.
Well, I think...
Get him another cake.
Yeah.
I think
Huddersfield Town fans will be pleased to hear you say that, because a lot of the neutrals wanted Forest because they're, I suppose...
There's a romance about Forest.
There's a romance about Forest. But then with Huddersfield, with what they've been through and what's happened with them this season and the you know the shoestring budget and so on and so forth, I think people have forgotten a little bit about that. Although you've been very vocal about them, Luke.
Second favourites to be relegated, Marcus. This
season. Well,
they've
done
amazing well. They've been defensively very good. They've been great from set pieces.
And the way Corbrand is, people have said you know he's influenced by Bielsa. The way he is such a sort of a scholar and student of the game, if you like, if you can be both of those things, you know the way he's come in. And what he's done with the club, you know, just every detail is there one on one.
I think they'll be good next season as well.
Well, this is it. So hopefully for Huddersfield's sake, that we know with Bielsa, it took a little bit longer at Leeds than we thought. But hopefully, with those kind of methods, players won't get a bit exhausted and a bit fed up.
I don't think they play like exactly like that.
No, but the style of management is quite intense. You know, with the detail.
But they've got a lot of the tools you need in that division to do well. They've got a brilliant goalkeeper. They're good from set pieces. He's turned them around defensively brilliantly. They're so difficult to beat.
Well, they were leaking goals before, and
exactly.
He's tightened them up well.
I want to come back to that, because what people will, I mean, Forest fans who maybe think we've been a bit unfair on them, which we don't mean to be, will say, well, Huddersfield Town didn't have a shot on target, right? So how can you expect to win? Well, they didn't have a shot on target because twice they were impinged in the penalty area. The referee didn't give them a chance to have a shot on target because they were impinged by Nottingham Forest defenders and it wasn't awarded. And I do think it's really important, having said what I've said about John Moss and about refereeing in general, there's a kind of permeating atmosphere now that actually you shouldn't really criticise referees because it's a hard job, right? It's a hard job to be a footballer as well.
Yep.
And they're working really hard all week, every week, to be the best they can be to get themselves these opportunities. And when they're being denied by someone who isn't very good at his job, it doesn't mean they shouldn't be criticised. I don't think you should criticise referees personally. And of course, some of the criticism's way over the top and it affects people's personal lives. And clearly, I'm not endorsing any of that. But I don't think, with that performance, he's fit to manage that, to referee that game. And that has cost Huddersfield arguably a chance to play in the Premier League. And I don't think that's right.
Yeah. Well said.
Jim won't listen because he doesn't like talking about refs. It's fair enough. But I think it has to be said.
But Jim rightly said, though, that Huddersfield have lost that in the worst way. You've got two, for some people, very much yourself and a lot of others, two Stonewall penalties there. And, of course, the own goal from Colwill, who's been a really good player for them. It was a great...
That's an unfortunate situation.
A very unfortunate situation. But Forest themselves, though, it's just wonderful for them. It's been so long. I mean, that banner in the Forest end, far we have travelled, much we have seen, kind of sums it up. You know, they're back and they've had a long time in the second tier of English football. In fact, they've even gone down further than that, of course. But it's been a long, long time, and they will have still felt, you know, in the back of their minds, like Leeds United, like Manchester City when they went down all the way down. That's where we belong at the top tier, and they've done it. It was interesting. Captain Joe Worrell's post match interview.
As you say, it was mad.
Yeah, I can't say we've been good in other seasons because we've been shite. What he said, which is quite honest. He also used a confusing analogy about the club and the players being a dog.
Yeah. He said, if you treat any dog with kindness, you become a nice dog.
Yeah.
Sounds scary, that, doesn't it?
It's the kind of thing that Marcus will put in the running order, which you know has been translated from Spanish. But you let him get away with it anyway. This was in English. I saw it with my own eyes. I heard it.
Absolutely right. But the scenes of celebration were incredible. And you saw what it meant because, you know, we know people ourselves who are Forest fans. And suddenly everyone was like, get me a ticket for that game.
Yeah.
The whole of the town came out to support them. It was absolutely phenomenal, the support they had. And they managed to do it. And of course, as you say, in the manner of the win, Forest fans won't give two hoots about that. And whoever went up,
why should they?
And whoever went up, it would have been in a great story. Jed Spence tweeted, where are my manners? Welcome to Twitter, Neil Warnock, while he had the playoff trophy and a big cigar on in the dressing room.
Big story.
Yes. Of course, Warnock sent him on loan to Forest when he was in charge of Middlesbrough. Warnock did reply saying, well done, Jed. I did say you were Premier League or non-league. Glad you listened and took my advice on board. Now go and enjoy your success.
Yeah.
Neil Warnock's really taken to Twitter.
Was his advice, go and play for a good manager?
Go get promoted.
It's a nice thing to say if it's done in the right spirit, which I'm sure it is, and he doesn't seem like a bad guy these days. But, I mean, it's a bit of a self-own. Yeah. Well, I couldn't get a tune out of you, but great Steve Cooper can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, you know.
Yeah, he's self-aware, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting one with Spence, isn't it? He's been linked with all kinds of teams, and it'd be brilliant if Forrest can get him permanently. I think it might be difficult because he's so highly rated and for good reason, but he'd be a massive asset to them.
Yeah, no, he would be, yeah.
Or remain a massive asset.
Well, what about Zinchenko? Oh, Philip Zinchenko. He got promoted with Watford last season and then was sent on loan to Forest. And there's no buyout clause, so he could be playing in the Championship again with Watford this season. Oh, next season, sorry.
That would be frustrating, wouldn't it?
Very frustrating indeed, yeah. But we're looking forward to seeing Forest in the Premier League, and looking forward to seeing what Steve Cooper can do.
I think it's an amazing story for Cooper because we talked about this before. We don't quite know what his ceiling is yet. He seems like a pretty impressive guy. I mean, aside from Joe Worrell's kind of quite surrealist approach to the post-match interview, he did obviously say a lot of interesting stuff about Cooper, about how good he was and how his attention to detail is so good. And he's had amazing success as a manager, even though he's not managed for that long, which has been punctuated by these kind of disappointments in the playoffs, which he's now kind of got over.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a huge surprise, would it, to see him really flourish in the Premier League with Forest, and then, you know, dare we say it, you know, in many, many years to come, go on to bigger and even better things.
They feel well placed to have a proper crack at staying there.
Yeah. Mm. I find Steve Cooper's a kind of interesting character because when you hear him speak, he just seems like quite an everyman.
Yeah.
He's not like someone where you're like, wow, he's a completely inspirational kind of charismatic guy.
He's not that expressive even, really, is he?
He seems a bit like the grey man, you know, but obviously his methods seem to work.
Yeah. I mean, another successful Welshman, of course, on the weekend because Gareth Bale got his fifth Champions League medal. Do you think Steve Cooper worked harder for his playoff?
I think Steve Cooper arguably has contributed more to Real Madrid this season.
Seven minutes, was it?
When a butterfly flaps its wings in Nottingham. Does it affect a Real Madrid result in Madrid? You never know. You know, and I do think with Bale, I'm not going to take anything away from him because he's had an amazing career.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something to be said about the fact that if you are going to spend a reasonable amount of your time publicly demonstrating against Real Madrid with that flag and all the rest of it, and essentially just disrespect them, should you really get a chance to enjoy their success when it comes along? I wonder whether you should, actually. And that's not to take anything away from what he's done in the past at Real Madrid, because obviously he's made a big contribution. I thought that was a bit rich from him.
Yeah, it's a shame because one of the greatest British players of all time.
100%.
Some could argue he is the best, but yeah, anyway.
I wouldn't argue that, but he's
up there. But anyway, back to the playoffs, of course. So well done, Forest. We look forward to seeing them and Fulham, of course.
Yes.
And Bournemouth.
Who could forget Fulham, Jim? We can't.
Not in this room.
No,
you can't, can you?
Marcus literally won't let us.
Yeah. Much more of a likely Arsenal win in that game.
Fulham will roll over for Arsenal, no problem. Play some lovely stuff.
Yeah.
It'd be like more of an homage to Arsenal, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Here's an homage to the great Arsenal sides. Fulham 0, Arsenal 3.
Can we have a lone player?
P.S. Can we have a lone player?
Elsewhere in the Football League playoffs, Mansfield lost 3-0 to Port Vale. Does Robbie Williams still bang on about Port Vale?
I believe he's playing a concert at Port Vale.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, coming up soon, because one of my friends is a cameraman for the gig.
There they are.
So there we go.
And a fan, maybe. Mm. But yes, Port Vale, we were talking about them. First trip back to Wembley since the 1996 Anglo-Italian Cup final. Mm. Of course, and they were playing in the League Two player final. Yeah, Mansfield did have a tough start when they conceded two and had a man sent off inside 35 minutes, and it's such a sickener for those fans when that happens. You just think, oh bollocks, you know, like what?
They had chances as well, Mansfield. They were teams clear off the line and big chances and all sorts, but it didn't quite work for them.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, but incredible for Darryl Clark, the Port Vale manager. He spent 6 weeks away from the club following a family bereavement in February. So amazing for him to be able to come back in and take them up. What did you think of Patrick Shanahan, the son of Port Vale's owner, Carroll, who had the players shave off all his hair in the dressing room after the game? Now, if you don't know him, he's got very long...
It's down to his whole back, essentially.
He hasn't now.
Yeah, but, well, he had very, very long hair. It was quite weird, and they shaved it off, and then he's kind of waving his hair around in the dressing room.
It was an odd situation.
It's quite troubling.
I mean, before I get onto that, on the Darryl Clark thing, I mean, what he's been through is absolutely awful. You know, he lost his daughter, as you said, in February, and you know, you'd have to have a very hard heart indeed to begrudge any success he's had since then, which of course, you know, will pale into insignificance after what he's been through, but nonetheless is a great feather in his cap. So your kind of heart goes out to him. On the Patrick Shanahan thing, it was kind of odd because it looked like a man who really just wanted to be a part of things. And like, how can I make my contribution here?
Yep.
Oh, the players will shave all my hair off in the dressing room. But if you watch the video, it's quite painful because after about 30 seconds, all the players have forgotten about it.
Yeah.
They're moving on to the next thing.
Hair all over the floor.
He's lost his hair.
Swinging his hair around.
How long has it taken to grow that hair, would you say?
Years. Absolutely years.
Gone in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, they're up at least.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure it'll grow back.
Wrexham are not going to be going up at all, are they? Because they were beaten in a mad playoff semi-final in the National League. They lost 5-4 to Grimsby Town. Incredible.
It really was.
Like, it was 5 goals in 17 minutes in the second half.
I think there were... If you count the obvious handball, which was kind of disguised as a header, which I think I am going to count for the purpose of this show, I think there were 7 headers in this game.
Amazing.
7 headed goals in one game.
Yeah.
It's got to be a record.
So obviously Luke Waterfall used to play for Wrexham as well. Mm-hmm. Gets involved with a couple of goals.
Yeah, well, he got the winner in the 119th minute.
And it was great to see Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney basically kicking every single ball.
Yeah.
The penalty, by the way, the opening goal, I think it was a penalty, and it was an absolute rocket off the crossbar.
Julian Dix-esque.
Yeah, it was. And then, it's kind of, I know that Reynolds and McElhenney have really thrown themselves into this whole Wrexham thing, but they wouldn't be the most experienced football fans. And I love the idea of them just watching this game. Is this what football's normally like? No. But the disappointment, yes.
The actual
7-headed goals in one game, no. Not
really. By the way, talking to Luke Waterfall, a listener emailed in suggesting that Waterfall had the worst ever game in a Grimsby shirt a few weeks
back. We had that on the show,
which you spoke about. And now he's 2 goals there.
A couple of weeks is a long time.
Eat your words, you fool. Actually, to be fair, he still might well has had the worst game, so it's a fair comment.
It doesn't negate it, does it?
No, it doesn't negate it. You're absolutely right. So I'll eat my own words. Mm. I'm the fool.
But according to BT Sport, the big one is happening on Sunday.
Well, yeah, absolutely. They'll play Solihull Moors in the final after they beat Chesterfield on Sunday. In the final, which of course the weekend's main event, the warm-up was the Champions League final.
What do you think of that game, Steve? Macca? Yeah,
be fine.
Do you feel a bit sorry for Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney?
They knew what they were getting themselves in for, didn't they?
Yeah. Reality bites hard.
Might help them in the long run.
They've bought Wrexham. Yeah. I mean, so I don't expect they were, unless they were grossly misled, I don't expect they were thinking Champions League football in the next couple of years. But that's all part of it, isn't it? It's all part of the... all part of life's rich pageant.
Indeed, yeah. Well, they might, I don't know, who knows what they'll do with Wrexham next season. Sporting director, I hear Ralph Rangnick's on available.
He is.
Maybe we'll tell
him. He's now head coach of Austria, so he's not available.
Well, no, but he can do more than one job.
He apparently can't, that's why he's not doing it.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Apparently he's doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
Someone woke up one morning and went, hang on. We're Man United. Yeah. You're not doing that.
Yeah, but Wrexham aren't Man United. Yeah. They might be soon.
They're true.
Anyway, maybe we'll have a bit of Ralph Rangnick chat tomorrow.
I certainly hope so. It'll be me and Jim tomorrow.
You can discuss whether it was a failure or a success.
We're talking
big Ralph in.
What are we going to do for the other 50 minutes? Because I tell you, my take on that isn't extensive for once.
But listen,
well done for a great weekend of football.
Yes.
Well done to Jake Humphrey. Well done to Steve Macca. Well done to Darren Fletcher and Des Kelly. Because when Des interviews Carlo Ancelotti after the game,
yes.
What I respect about him is he makes sure it's a wide shot and he's in it as well. You know, it's not about Carlo. No. It's about Dez and his pearly whites with the microphone getting involved as well. And that, for me, is the takeaway from the weekend's football.
Carlo doesn't have a show reel to keep updated, does he?
No, he doesn't.
He does have a trophy cabinet that needs updated. Yeah. I'm always reminded, though, that when you think it's bad, just remember those two in Qatar. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, with more scintillating red-hot football chat. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
I can't guarantee that, but I will be here.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
You're welcome.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.